Welcome into the Davis and Beadle podcast. Jim Davis, Curtis Beadleman. Beadle, how are you doing?
I'm good. It's not snowing today, Jim.
I know, so don't blame me. Because last time you were trying to blame me that every time I talk to you when we do the podcast, it's snowing.
Yeah.
Or it's some inclement weather.
It's supposed to be tomorrow.
Well, so what? That's tomorrow. Today is today, and blame me for today, but it's not snowing today, so you can't blame me for it. So get over it.
Is that like, fool me once? Shame on me. Maybe we can ask Jeff Reitich.
Maybe so. Or former president, former President Bush, George W. Because I believe that was George W-ism, by the way, that you were trying to roll out there.
For him.
Yeah.
I could botch it just like him.
So, as you referenced, a dream coming true for a lot of Rockies fans, and that is the resignation, the mutual parting of the ways of Jeff Breidich as the Rockies GM and the Colorado Rockies. So they say the move was mutual. Greg Fiesel, formerly the executive vice president and chief operating officer, is going to take over the baseball operations. He's getting a title by being bumped up to president and chief executive officer. A guy like, Kelly McGregor, who, of course, we lost several years ago, who was the Rockies team president, former NFL player, has been with the Rockies for 25 years. A lot of experience in areas like ticket sales and merchandising, human resources, no baseball experience. And they're supposed to name a general manager at some point. But a couple of things here. First, Breidich is gone. They finally are going back to the model that was probably their most successful model, which was Kelly McGregor, team president, the buffer between Dick Monfort and the general manager. Dick Monfort took on some of those responsibilities and, let's be honest, didn't know what he was doing. So I guess just your takeaway, like I said, it's not going to solve everything, but it's certainly, it's a step in the right direction that Breidich is no longer going to be there.
Yeah, and I think the first thought in my head was, all right, everybody got what they wanted after the deal went down, which doesn't make the Nolan Arenado deal feel any better. But no. It was almost like Jeff Breidich said, "I'm going to give them what they want, but I'm going to do it in the douchiest way possible." And then he's going to wait for a month into the season and then waltz out of here. And I don't know. To me, it's gutless. To stand up and say the things that he and Monfort said in that press conference after the Nolan Arenado deal, and then, a month into the season, not going real well, just go ahead and quit and walk away. Seems really, really gutless to me. But you still get what you want out of the deal from that standpoint. Is if you're a Rockies fan, you want that guy gone. And he's gone, so now he can't screw up the Trevor Story deal. Somebody else can try and screw that up, and we'll see how it goes. But the points about Kelly McGregor and the way they used to run it are valid ones, although my biggest problem with that idea is that it still didn't net them a bunch of wins and division titles and high level of competition. There were some good teams, don't get me wrong, but the Rockies still have not, over time, proven that they can maintain a competitive roster for more than a year. So that's the biggest guess for them right now. How do they do that? How do they get back to trying to do that, or at least showing that they have some chops when it comes to building a roster? And right now, they don't have much of one right now. So,
well, and it gets
start from scratch.
And we've talked about this a lot in our local show, that it's not that the Dick Monfort's cheap. People are like, oh, the Rockies are so cheap. No, they're not. They had like the 11th highest payroll in baseball. They don't spend their money wisely. And certainly Jeff Breidich is the poster boy for that. I mean, okay, during the Jeff Breidich era, which started 2014, the free agents that he brought in, from the Gerardo Parras to the Brian Shaws to the Ian Desmonds, Daniel Murphy, you know what their combined WAR was?
Yeah, it's got to be like close to -10 or something like that.
It's not quite that bad. It's -3.8. And they spent, the Rockies did, and Breidich spent $241.5 million for Desmond, Wade Davis, Gerardo Parra, which Gerardo Parra is probably one of the better ones that they brought in. Brian Shaw, Jake McGee, Daniel Murphy, you know, Mike Dunn, remember Mike Dunn, Jason Mott, that they all brought, you know, all those guys came in, and it was a minus 3.8 run. Yeah.
Don't forget Jake McCree runs.
That's true. That is very true. So don't want to forget that.
Still pitching.
So I just,
I'm not sure how.
Yeah, I'm not sure how either, but I just think that, you know, it's been long overdue, but isn't the timing a little weird that, you know, they win a couple of series. They take two against the Astros. They win two out of three against the Phillies. And then the Monday after that, this announcement that Bradich is gone. And so it just makes me, it makes me wonder a little bit what has gone on here that all of a sudden made Bradich and Dick Monfort say, okay, it's time to part ways. I mean, when the team is starting to actually trend in the right direction, it's actually winning some games. Just the timing seems really, really weird on this whole thing. But, you know, there was the Athletic report about Bradich being distant, not talking to people, frustrated employees and players. Obviously, Nolan Arenado was frustrated with Bradich's approach and their relationship. It's, to me, okay. I'm glad it's finally happened. I just find it curious. Why did it happen today?
I think it's odd as well. I think, to be honest with you, I think it's this is like the point of least attention when it comes to the Rockies for the season. If it gets much worse than it had started, I mean, the outcry is going to be even louder than it already has
been. Right.
And if it gets better and they start playing well, and then you get to host the All-Star game and you get to be a story and all that stuff, then all of a sudden, you know, the Monforts or the brightest fans, which are, they'll start chirping in the other direction. So to me, it's like they're going to make this move regardless, is what it seems to me, you know, whether it was at the end of the season or whether it was now. It seems like they picked the time to just say, you know what, we're just going to do this, and we're going to move on with our season. We're going to move on with, you know, a new sort of era, so to speak, of Rockies baseball. And it is, if you think about it, it's going to be, you know, without Nolan Arenado and coming out of the COVID season and in the heyday of the NL West with the Dodgers and Padres, it's time. It's time to do something drastic. It's time to start over from that standpoint. I don't mean start over from the respect of getting rid of everybody or anything like that.
Right.
But they have to acknowledge that they're in the back seat right now, and they got to do something different. And to be honest with you, I'll be more interested and more entertained when they announce that they're going to restructure their entire scouting department. Because what you mentioned before is really where the problem lies. GMs, most of them, not all of them, but most of them, they don't really know baseball players all that well. They look at a lot of stats, they look at a lot of data, and they trust the people that know the players. And that's their scouting department, be they advanced scouts or tell scouts or anything. When it comes to that department, you know, they got to trust them, and they got to try to understand where those guys are sending them and what direction and why and all those good things. And that's what's been a total failure. You mentioned all the free agent signings. He has to wear the collar for those, right? But the truth is, somebody told him that's going to be a good sign, and it didn't turn out.
Right.
Time after time after time again. And I don't know the scouting department that well. I don't know if there's a few names that have been around for a while, but they haven't produced wonderful results, whether it's free agents, whether it's trades, whether it's identifying prospects, and then through the draft as well. They just haven't done the job. And so it doesn't really matter who the GM is if the information that they're taking is garbage. And that's what it's been for the last, I don't know, 7-8 years. Now, right. Don't get me wrong, there's been a few good ones. You know, you see guys like Marquez, and you see guys like Freeland. Hopefully he can get healthy again. And you go, okay, maybe there's some hope there. But when you look through their prospect lists and you look through the years of players that have come and gone and that have gone and moved on to better situations and are performing, the list is too long. They're not doing a good job of scouting and developing. So when they restructure that, then I'll be interested and entertained by what they're doing.
Right.
So
and I've read
some, they're going to keep spinning the wheel.
Yeah. And I've read a few things that, you know, the analytics side of things is not where it should be in compared to other major league teams. And you look at, you know, just a variety of things with, you know, what they got for Nolan Arenado. Here's a guy that's going to be a, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer, I think, down the road. And you get Austin Gomber, and Gomber's been okay, but that's not equal value for Nolan Arenado. And David Dahl, they don't re-sign him, and they were going to pay him. I mean, it was going to be nothing. It's going to be chump change compared to all the guys I talked about earlier. And he's actually off to a pretty good start with the Rangers. I mean, just a lot of just bad decisions and just the Jeff Breidich demeanor of I know more than you, and look at the, I mean, and would not allow to be, didn't like to be questioned by anybody in the media about his decisions, bristled anytime anybody asked a question. It was at least, you know, even the least bit in his, you know, mind confrontational. It's been long overdue. And whether it's, you know, like you said, maybe wanting to get this out of the way before the All-Star game coming up in July, maybe this was part of it too, that they didn't want the Breidich narrative to be part of that, right? Of the, you know, the Rockies hosting the All-Star game. And yeah, the Rockies are hosting it, but yeah, they still got a, you know, one of the worst GMs in baseball and Jeff Breidich. So maybe they just thought, let's take care of it now. Let's get it out of the way and let's move forward. But, you know, people have been clamoring, like myself, for some kind of team president, a buffer between the GM and Dick Monfort. And so at least now that buffer is going to be in place. At least it's another person to go, wait a minute, is this really what we want to do? Is this the right decision to make? And hopefully, like you said, the information that whoever the next GM is gets, that has to be, and that, like, you're right, I think you're spot on. That's part of the problem for the Rockies as well. But let's talk about at least the positive thing that has nothing to do with Jeff Breidich at the moment, is how the Rockies have been playing as of late. They still haven't won a game on the road as we do this on a Monday. They'll play at San Francisco tonight. But they won the two against the Astros, take two out of three against the Phillies. And you look at the starting pitching right now. John Gray got the win on Sunday. They got behind 2-0, but has been kind of the case so far for John Gray this year. Gives up a couple runs. You know, Harper had a couple of solo bombs in that game, and then he just shuts things down. And the Rockies were able to have that 7-run fourth inning yesterday that helped them get the win over the Phillies to wrap up that series. I just think that you look at the starting pitching right now, I think I saw where they're eighth, I believe, in starting ERA in all of Major League Baseball, which is phenomenal. We saw certainly Trevor Story get it going with the long ball, the home run Friday, third career grand slam yesterday. CJ Cron has started to kind of figure things out a little bit, you know, from an offensive standpoint, had a good game yesterday, 4-for-5. He hit a bomb. But, you know, like I said, right now for the Rockies, winning a couple of series, that's huge. And now they go out on the road to San Francisco, which has some really good starting pitching right now for Gabe Kapler.
Yeah, and that's been the surprise for the whole year, even though the wins haven't been there until this last weekend. That's been the surprise the whole time, is the starting pitching's been quality. So, you know, give John Gray credit. I was probably one of the biggest proponents of moving him to the bullpen two, three seasons ago, and just saying, you know, see if you can figure it out down there. He's been pretty good for his last couple seasons, and he's consistent now, which is something that, you know, I think that he always thought he could be, but he never showed it. And, you know, the Rockies still come down to, are they going to swing it? And when Trevor Story finally decided to join the production crew, I don't know, all of a sudden that starting pitching starts to look a lot more productive as well, because they're getting some run support. So, you know, I think it's a really nice series win for the Rockies, but you're right, they're going to have to back it up with a couple or three more. And we mentioned that, you know, they faced some wicked starting pitching to start the season, and so they didn't have to face that necessarily in Philadelphia. And you can see that maybe that paid off a little bit, and maybe there is a story to tell there for that first, you know, 3 weeks of the season where they had high quality pitching of their own, but they were just going up against some of the best dudes in the league, and you know, maybe they have a little bit more than you gave them credit for. But they'll have to do it over time, as is everything with the Rockies. You got to prove it for more than a week or two. So.
Well, and you look at, you know, the majority of their games have been at Coors Field. So yep. That says a lot about the starting pitching, that they have been able to, you know, at that dreaded Coors Field, go out and pitch very effectively. Austin Gomber has pitched well there. Certainly John Gray yesterday. Herman Marquez hasn't really quite hit his stride yet, but it's not like he's, you know, entirely off in the ditch so far. And it's been a good start for the Rockies, no doubt about that, from a starting pitching standpoint. All right, I wanted to get your thoughts about the doubleheader with the Diamondbacks and the Braves, because you had Zach Gallen throwing a one-hitter for the Diamondbacks in the first game, and then Madison Bumgarner comes out in the second game, throws a no-hitter. It doesn't count. Now, Gallen's one-hitter counts as a one-hitter, even though it was a seven-inning game, but he throws a no-hitter. Look, he threw a no-hitter yesterday. Whether you like Bumgarner or not, and I always have kind of liked Madison Bumgarner, it's kind of silly, right? It's because this is what Rob Manfred in Major League Baseball wanted with the doubleheaders after last year with COVID, of them being seven-inning games, not nine-inning games. Should it, you know, look, should it not count as a no-hitter?
I think it should. I think, though, the best part about this is hopefully it'll expose enough of the displeasure with the seven-inning games that maybe they can change it back. It's ridiculous. What are we doing playing seven-inning games in the big leagues? That's absolutely off the charts ridiculous when you have rosters with, you know, anywhere from 12 to 15, or the ability to have up to 15 pitchers on them if they really want to. That'd be a lot, but they could if they have that situation where they can make some call-ups and stuff like that. You got the arms. These are all professional pitchers. Go ahead, play the 2-9 inning games. I don't understand why that became something of an issue. The 7-inning games make no sense. Absolutely none. They're played differently. You can ask any college coach. You can ask Coach Hanks when he's on the program with how they approach the 7-inning doubleheaders versus the 9-inning games. They're absolutely played differently, and it's ridiculous to think that that's what they needed to do in Major League Baseball. I don't understand why that was an issue, but. To answer your question, absolutely, it should be a no-hitter. If you're going to call that the complete game, if that's the rule, that's how you get the win.
Yeah,
Bumgarner
went. He went seven innings. That's as long as the game was. And according to this is a 1991 ruling from Major League Baseball's Committee on Statistical Accuracy, that they define a no-hitter as a game in which a pitcher or pitchers gives up no hits while pitching at least nine innings. A pitcher may give up a run or runs as long as he pitches nine innings or more and does not give up a hit. So they think that the reason this rule came about was Andy Hawkins for the Yankees in 1990 allowed no hits in eight innings, lost 4-0 on four unearned runs. And they apparently thought it was just the record keepers couldn't live with the fact that Hawkins would get credit for a no hitter when he pitched eight innings but gave up four unearned runs. I just think for Madison Bumgarner, like, and I'm neither here nor there with the 7-inning games. I'm with you. I think it's big league baseball should be nine for a doubleheader, but he went the distance in the game, the innings he was allowed to pitch. That is a ridiculous thing to say. It's not a no hitter. It doesn't count. College baseball. Guy goes seven innings, gets no hitter, right? It's a no hitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just don't think you're going to have some statistical anomalies here and there. Nobody's going to like hold this stuff up to the microscope and be like, oh, well, this sport can't be trusted. You kidding me? You know, seven inning no hitter. Well, I'm never watching baseball again. It's not going to happen.
Right.
So in the bin with some of the other things that have happened, like the one you mentioned. I mean, I remember, combined no-hitters. Nobody remembers combined no-hitters.
No, they don't.
But they happen, you know. So it just goes in that same kind of compartment with those. Is it an awesome accomplishment for him? Absolutely. Does he wish it was nine innings? Absolutely. Is he going to think that it's comparable to Nolan Ryan's seventh no-hitter? No. He's not going to compare it to that. It's a seven-inning game. But he did the job, and he did what he was asked to do, and it's just ridiculous. Give him the credit for it. It's stupid.
Oh,
nobody's going to be hurt.
Yeah, and because prior to 1991, if you threw seven innings in a game and say got stopped because of weather or whatever, and it was a complete game, you got credit for no hitter.
Yeah.
So because of the Andy Hawkins game, apparently this is what, you know, Jason Stark and some others are writing about, that they think that's probably why they made that change in 1991. It's ridiculous. You should have a no hitter. I mean, but you know, that's until, you know, they're able to go back and, you know, revise that. I mean, it's going to go as just a win for Madison Bumgarner, not a no hitter.
People will probably remember it better now because of this, if we're being honest.
Right.
Like, I mean, Madison Bumgarner's been a great pitcher for a long time and, you know, probably should have a no hitter or two under his belt because he was that good. He hasn't been quite that good here in the last 2 years, but for a stretch there, he was as good as it gets. And, you know, if he's remembered for this, I'm okay with that, I guess. But, you know, I still don't, when I think of Madison Bumgarner, I think of the postseason Madison Bumgarner.
Right.
That's the stuff that you remember. Whether it was a 7-inning game or a 9-inning game, or nobody cares. You're not hurting anybody's feelings. They've made a mountain out of a molehill. That's what they've done. So.
Well, I like what Bumgarner said in the post game. He says, "I want to thank the shadows in Atlanta. They helped me out a good bit." So thinking the shadows in Atlanta for making those pitches a little bit tough to pick up.
They must have helped out all day because that was 14 innings of one hit baseball. So
Zach Gallen gives up just the one hitter to the Braves in game one of that doubleheader. All right, wrap it up with a little Colorado Mesa baseball talk. I know as we do this today, they're playing Regis over in the Front Range. And had the chance to do their game on Friday night against New Mexico Highlands. And Andrew Morse, just one of those guys, you know, early on, seems like he's kind of struggling a little bit. You know, control's not exactly, you know, pinpoint for him. And then all of a sudden, it's like he goes, okay, enough of this crap. And he goes out and just shuts him down. Of course, they scored 20 runs in that game, in that game one on Friday night. But Andrew Morse, you know, still unbeaten on the season. We talked about the Maverick pitching last week. But this team, the number one team in the nation, offensively, I mean, from top to bottom, Hayden McGeary to Jordan Stubbings, you know, to Matthew Turner, along with that great pitching they have right now. Highlands, they came in with a very short roster in that series this past weekend. But the Mavericks continue their domination, what I think 16 in a row, I believe, heading into the games today with Regis.
Yeah, and they won their first game against Regis.
Okay, thank you. I didn't check that yet. Thank
17.
You.
Yeah, that's okay. I think it ended right before you called. Either way, though, what you're talking about is just an absolute wrecking ball of an offense from a team standpoint. There's guys in that lineup that obviously are phenomenal and are going to put up, you know, some record type numbers for a season, you know, with some the RBIs and the batting averages that they're having. But I think what's most amazing about this team is they never seem to be out of an inning. They can look really off for a couple batters and you think, maybe one more time through the order, then they'll get it going. And then all of a sudden one, two out hit sparks them. And it's just contagious, and it's been contagious the whole year, obviously, with the run production that they've had. So that's what's been pretty crazy with this team. You know, there's been a lot of really great offenses at CMU over the years, but I don't know if I remember one that can score like this from a standpoint of at any moment in the game, no matter how many outs, no matter what the count is, they may go off for six or seven runs. And you can't stop that. It's just that's the scary part about facing this team is if you get through the order once without giving up a run, you should be doing cartwheels and backflips because it just doesn't happen. And they've just gotten so good at kind of relying on the next guy mentality. It doesn't matter who's coming up. They find holes when they need to, and they just battle through at bats. And know, you wonder how long that's sustainable or whether that's something that is about the opponents that they're facing. But, I mean, it's college baseball. It's RMAC baseball. It's been an offensive league for a long time, but there's still great players and good teams in this conference, and they're just destroying them offensively and just doing it in bunches that I haven't really witnessed before. Maybe 1997, way, way, way back when they were still using -5 backs, and I think we led the country in run production that year too. But man, it's impressive what they've done just top to bottom throughout that lineup.
Yeah, and I want to give Kyle Newman at the Denver Post a little tip of the hat. Had a nice piece about Andrew Morris, and then also wrote about the teams in the RMAC, not just Colorado Mesa, but other teams that hope to move on to regional play, like UCCS, you know, and certainly Metro State, you know, among them Regis as well, that might get, you know, the chance to move on in the postseason. But certainly the Mavericks look like they are primed to do what they've done before, and that's get to a World Series and carry, and maybe this time is the time that they come back with a national championship. But a lot of work to be done between now and then. All right, Beetle, I always appreciate it.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds like a plan to me.
All right, that's the Davis and Beetle podcast.